Well, we're beginning tonight a study of 1st and 2nd Chronicles. 1st and 2nd Chronicles is obviously a critical historical book. In the Hebrew, it's named Dibhiri HaYamim, which the words concerning the days, or in other words, it's a chronicle. So it's counted in the Hebrew, in some of the Hebrew Bibles, as one book. 1st and 2nd Chronicles is really just a single book in many Bibles. When it was translated into Greek in the Septuagint, a couple of centuries before Christ's ministry, they called it in the Greek supplements, because they viewed it as covering materials, the same materials as 1st and 2nd Kings, but from a little different vantage point. So they mentioned supplements. Jerome in his Latin Vulgate called it Chromicon, in other words, a chronicle. It's from that we get our English name for the book, 1st and 2nd Chronicles. 1st and 2nd Kings, that we've been through already, gives us the political history. 1st and 2nd Chronicles will give us a very similar history, but from a religious or priestly or Levitical point of view. It will omit things that are not pertinent to that particular focus, but includes other things that the others don't have. So they form a history in a strange kind. It starts with Adam in a genealogical sense, goes through the death of Saul, just with fragmentary segments of a genealogy. And then it ends with the decree of Cyrus, the Persian, who frees them from the exile in 2 Chronicles, the last verse, last chapter, in 538. So that's the span of time. In a broad sense, it starts with Adam, up through Saul, but just in a cursory, just by laying out a genealogy, pretty much. But then from there on, it gets into a narrative that takes you all the way through the reign of David, through Solomon, and the Davidic kings right up until Jehoiakim and Coniah and the Babylonian captivity. David and Judah, the tribe of Judah, are the focal points. And that's why it comes from a priestly or Levitical point of view, but extolling David and his dynasty. It makes reference all through here to all kinds of books that have been lost. The book of the Annals of David, the book of the kings of Israel and Judah, the book of the kings of Judah, the book of the kings of Israel, the Annals of the kings of Israel, and there's many others that it makes reference to but have been lost through the centuries. Now, the genealogies cover the first 9 chapters of the first book. The rest of 1 Chronicles will deal with the reign of David himself. 2 Chronicles takes on the reign of Solomon for the first 9 chapters, and then deals with what I'll call the Davidic dynasty, the succeeding kings, all the way down to the point where they're into captivity. Let's take a look at it with our timeline. If you remember this from Learning the Bible in 24 Hours, where we lay out from the creation right to the present day. Genesis, of course, covers that history for thousands of years right up to the Exodus. The rest of the Old Testament takes it from the Exodus to the exile, as Chronicles will. After that, there's a 400-year period they call the Silent Years, although they're pre-written. You can find the record of those Silent Years in Daniel, chapter 11, 5 through 35. Then we have the ministry of Christ, the diaspora, Israel restored, and brings us to the present day. But we're going to focus on this period of time called the monarchy, from Saul to the exile. Saul, David, Solomon, and those that followed. And so we have Samuel, who's the bridge between the judges and the monarchy. Brings you to the King Saul. Saul will be treated very briefly in Chronicles, you'll see. After Saul, of course, comes David, then Solomon. And then after Solomon, when he dies, there's the civil war where it breaks into two nations. The southern kingdom, we'll call it, of Judah, the northern kingdom of Israel. The northern kingdom goes from bad to worse pretty fast and gets wiped out totally in the Assyrian captivity or exile. The southern kingdom has a few good kings, but it drifts finally to the point where God judges them also into Babylon. There's a big difference. The northern kingdom has no respite. It's over as a nation. The southern kingdom would be also, except for the fact that God made a promise to David. So for David's sake, the southern kingdom goes into Babylon for a limited period, literally 70 years, whereupon they're released. So 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel. 1 Samuel takes you up to David. 2 Samuel gives you the history of David. 1 Kings from Solomon up to a checkpoint where 2 Kings takes over. Elijah and Elisha are the two prophets that bridge that changeover from 1 Kings to 2 Kings. So that's a broad view. Chronicles is going to take, 1 Chronicles take the same period that 2 Samuel does, except very superficially. And then 2 Chronicles will take you from Solomon right up until the Babylonian exile. And again, you can almost look at it as a religious perspective rather than a political perspective. So we have 1 and 2 Samuel, then we have 1 and 2 Kings, and in some Bibles, of course, they're called 1 and 2, 3 and 4 Kings. Chronicles will be a recap, if you will, of the southern kingdom from the point of view of Judah. It says very little about the northern kingdom, its rival kingdom in a sense. So we have Samuel, Saul, and David in 1st book of Samuel. And we have David's triumphs, David's troubles in 2 Samuel. His triumphs at Hebron and at Jerusalem, but then all his troubles in this family and in the nation following. This is just by way of a survey review of books that you've already gone through. First book of Kings, we have King Solomon in his ascension, temple built. It takes it to the peak of the monarchy for 40 years. From chapters 12 on in 1 Kings, you have the divided kingdom. For 80 years, it covers that, the accession of Rehoboam, and then the split, the civil war and the split in the two kingdoms. Second book of Kings is probably the most tragic narrative ever written. As these blessed kingdoms go down, as much as God has blessed them, they both deteriorate. Northern kingdom, we have the ministry of Elisha trying to repair things to the death of Jehu. Then there's some annals of both kingdoms leading up to the Assyrian captivity of the northern kingdom and Judah, the southern kingdom. In this period, Jonah, Amos, and Hosea are the prophets to the northern kingdom. The southern kingdom, you have a whole fist of Obadiah, Joel, Isaiah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, and Jeremiah, all prophesied to the southern kingdom right up till the time that God brings them into captivity. Ends with, of course, the Babylonian captivity in Judah. But of course, Chronicles is going to repeat that in a sense. I want to just give you that perspective from your previous studies. The first 9 chapters, we have basically a genealogy from Adam to Jacob, Jacob to David, David to Zedekiah, and then the tribal allotments. Starting at chapter 10 through the rest of 1 Chronicles, we'll talk about David. Anointment, his moving the ark to Jerusalem, and the covenant and the temple. When we get to 2 Chronicles, of course, it'll deal with Solomon and the building of the temple, and then Judah's history, right up to the exile, the deterioration of the kingdom there. Understand the difference between the northern and southern kingdom. The northern kingdom, which called itself the House of Israel, there were 19 kings that reigned for 250 years, 7 different dynasties. Everybody murdering each other and what have you, going from bad to worse. Leading, finally, to where God uses the Assyrians to wipe them out. As a nation, obviously. They're taken into captivity, but they no longer exist as a nation. The southern kingdom is a little different. They had 20 kings that reigned for 370 years, so they lasted longer. The important thing to realize, it was one dynasty. Dynasty of David. And that's going to be one of the preoccupations, if you will, of the chronicler, is to give us the background and the ups and downs of the Davidic, of the house of David. And even there, it's going to go into captivity as a judgment, not as an obliteration, but with prophets pointing out to them that it's just for 70 years, that they have a promise of return, which, of course, God honored to the very day, by the way. And we'll be dealing with all of that as we get it. This will be our focus, will be the southern kingdom in the study. I'd like to talk, before we go any further, about a Dr. Robert Dick Wilson. In 1955, he was the head of Semitic languages in Princeton. He was able to read and write 45 ancient Semitic languages. That was his thing. When he was only 25 years old, he was fluent in 9 of those languages. He memorized the entire New Testament in Hebrew, every syllable, and many books of the Old Testament also. Over a period of 45 years, he was devoted to the Old Testament, accumulating, studying in all languages, tracking down all the archaeology that was in existence, all translations. He investigated every single consonant, in other words, every letter in the Old Testament. That's over 1.25 million letters that he analyzed thoroughly. Over many years, 45 years, every version, every emendations of critics, all the notes of the Masoretes, every variation, manuscripts, version, and so forth. There are 29 kings listed in the Bible that are also found on ancient monuments. 195 consonants are involved, and these are located in 10 different countries. From the Old Testament, only two out of the 190 consonants ever were called into question. In the Old Testament, they are exactly as they are inscribed on the monuments, some of which are dated over 4,000 years old. The names are exactly the same, every letter clear and correct. In contrast to this record of the Bible, the greatest librarian at the major intellectual center of the old world in Alexandria in 200 BC, in 38 catalogs, only two or three names are recognizable. In Assyria, only one recognizable and not spelled correctly. Ptolemy, 18 kings, none of them intelligible. His conclusion, recently published in what is an expert by the Bible League Quarterly, says, "I defy any man on the ground of evidence. There is not a page in the Old Testament about which you need have any doubt." Joe Foust, pastor at Calvary Chapel, Philadelphia, just chaired a 800-pastor conference, which included a review of the purity of the Bible. And he went at some length. I had to include some of the highlights of that thing. Because the key point is, think about what that means. That we have in our lab something that's proven vastly more reliable than any of the secular records, even of the period back then. Well, let's get into it. First Chronicles chapter 1, the patriarchal genealogies. And this is the way it starts. Adam, Seth, Enosh, Kenan. Now, bear in mind, these are transliterations. So you'll, from Bible to Bible, even within the Bible, you'll find them sometimes transliterated slightly differently. But that's the transliteration issue that's going on here, dealing with here. Adam, Seth, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalalel, Yared, Henoch, Methuselah, Lamech, Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Sons of Japheth, on he goes. You know, it's interesting. I can't resist. You know, this is one of the most frustrating books to teach because we have to find a path between two extremes. Going through this verse by verse, just reading the genealogies, is going to get pretty tedious on the one hand. On the other hand, behind most of these names are fabulous stories. So if we try to pick up the stories of even just the highlights, we'll never get through it. There's that much here. So the trick we're going to have to do is steer a path between the tedium of just reading these unpronounceable names in many cases and, on the other hand, going down all these rabbit trails it can lead to. So I picked a few things to touch on. Bear with me. But I can never miss the first 10 genealogies in the Bible because many people always ask me, are there hidden messages in the Bible? And I always point out to them Proverbs 25:2. It is the glory of God to conceal a thing, but it's the honor of kings or duty of kings to search out a matter. And I usually, here's a riddle. Who's the oldest man in the Bible? Well, obviously everyone will tell me Methuselah lived 969 years. Yet he died before his father. I love to throw this in a small study group in the neighborhood because that causes people to scratch their head. How can Methuselah be the oldest man in the Bible and yet he died before his father? That's because everybody forgets who his father was. And that's his father was Enoch, who didn't die. Right? He was translated. Enoch, at the age of 65, something happened in his life that altered his entire world, after which he walked with God for some 300 years. He was told that as long as his son was alive, the judgment of the flood would be withheld. The flood did not come as a surprise. It was preached on for four generations. But Enoch was told that as long as his newly born son is alive, the judgment of the flood would be withheld. So he named him Methuselah from two words, a Hebrew word, muth, which means death, and shalach, which is a verb meaning to bring or send forth. So Methuselah is a name that has within it the meaning his death shall bring or send forth. Now, if you do your homework in Genesis 5, you'll discover that when Methuselah was 187, he had a son by the name of Lamech. When Lamech was 182, he had a son by the name of Noah, and it was Noah's 600th year the flood came. In other words, the year that Methuselah dies is the year the flood came. In other words, his life was a prophecy. And whenever I talk about this, I'm always intrigued because I try to imagine what it would be like raising that kid as a child. Because every time he caught a cold, the entire neighborhood, of course, would take an interest and be panicked. So we have a genealogy in Genesis 5 that is paralleled here in 1 Chronicles. I'm using this as an excuse just to get warmed up here. We have these 10 names: Adam, Seth, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalalel, Yared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, and Noah. If there's all this hidden meaning in the name of Methuselah, what about these other nine guys? Well, let's take a quick look at them. Adam comes from Adamah, which means man. Seth is a Hebrew root meaning appointed. In fact, Eve even explains this in Genesis 4:25. She said, "For God hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew." That's why she named him Seth. He was appointed a replacement. He has a son by the name of Enosh, which is a Hebrew word meaning mortal, frail, or miserable. It comes from the root Anash, which is usually used of a wound as being incurable and so on. He has a son by the name of Kenan. Not Canaan, as some Bibles have it, but it's Kenan. In fact, the Kenites, there's a pun on the Kenites that Balaam uses in Numbers and so forth. Anyway, Kenan can mean sorrow, dirge, or elegy. These are kind of grim names to go through school with, right? So when he has a son, he changes the pattern here a little bit. He names him a mouthful, but a fabulous name. Mahalalel, Mahal, which means the blessed or praised one, and El, the name for God. Mahalalel means the blessed or praised God. He has a son by the name of Yared. Now, Yared is a verb which means shall come down. And there's some reasons for this I'll spare going into here. Enoch we've mentioned, but what does his name mean? It's an academic term referring to commencement or teaching. By the way, the oldest prophecy uttered by a prophet in the Old Testament was uttered by Enoch. Before the flood of Noah was a prophecy of the second coming of the Messiah. Enoch, also the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these, saying, "Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment upon all and to convince all that are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds which they have ungodly committed and of all their hard speeches which ungodly sinners have spoken against him." So his prophecy tells us that the Lord's coming is sure, that we know who will accompany him, that the purpose of his coming and the result of his coming. It's a very important prophecy. You'll find it in the book of Jude. Now, Enoch was translated, or raptured, if I can use that term, halfway between Adam and Abraham. Elijah was translated halfway between Abraham and Christ. So these two characters are well known to most of us that have studied the Old Testament. Enoch walked with God. Now, that was not a casual stroll. That went lasted for 300 years. He did that, according to Hebrews 11. They were in agreement. He was surrendered to God, and he witnessed of him. And all the privileges he had are available to you and I today. To you and me today. Sorry about the prepositional phrase. Okay, so we talked about Methuselah. He was the next one. We've gone through all that. Lamech is his son. And here's a root that is not just in Hebrew, it's in English also. In our word lament or lamentation, the root in the Hebrew means despairing or its equivalent. And then we have Noah. How many of you have heard of Noah in here? Okay, about 60%. That's not bad. Noah's name, two-letter name, comes from Nacham, which means to bring relief or comfort or rest, if you will. So here we are. We see this genealogy: Adam, Seth, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalalel, Yared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, and Noah. Man, the appointed, mortal, sorrow. But the blessed God shall come down teaching that his death, whose death? God's death, shall bring the despairing comfort or rest. Now, there's no way you'll ever convince me that a group of Jewish rabbis contrived to hide a summary or précis of the Christian gospel in a genealogy in the Torah. No way. This also tells you that God's plan of redemption was not a knee-jerk reaction to being surprised by Adam's sin. He planned this before the foundation of the world, Ephesians 1:4. The New Testament is in the Old Testament concealed. And the Old Testament is in the New Testament revealed. Now, for most of you that have been through our Learn the Bible 24 Hours, this is by way of review, but I had to start with a warm-up here. And at this point, let's take a look. Let's go on now. The sons of Japheth, we've got three sons. Ham, Shem, of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Let's take Japheth first. Sons of Japheth, Gomer, and Magog, and Madai, and Yavin, and Tubal, and Meshech, and Tiras, and the sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz, Rephath, and Togarmah. This suddenly plunges us into the material of Genesis 10, called the Table of Nations to most of us. And we have Noah's three sons. And Japheth had Gomer, Magog, Madai, Yavin, Tubal, Meshech, and Tiras. And from that, we have the nations, Herodotus and Plutarch and so forth, talk about Gomer, the ancestor to the Sumerians, who settled along the Danube and the Rhine, Ashkenaz, Riphath. Strange as it may seem, the name Europe may have come from Riphath. The Togarmah, the Armenians, Turkey, Turkestan. Also Magog, the Scythians. We'll talk a lot about them as we face the reality of the impending invasion of Israel by the Magogians or the Scythians. Hesiod, the Greek didactic poet, makes this clear. Herodotus, there's other, we won't get into all of that here. Madai, or the Medes, known today mostly as the Kurds, emerged about the 10th century in a coalition with Persia to the 7th century. And then we have Tubal, Meshech. These are all Turkish or Greek roots here that we're talking about. Let's move on to Japheth. We have Gomer, Ashkenaz, Rephath, and Togarmah, and Yavin, Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dedanim. Well, that's the Japheth drawing. Let's take a look at Ham, the other son, Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, and Canaan. And Mitzrayim is upper and lower Egypt. Cush is Ethiopia and also the Kassites, everything east of Assyria in that sense. They settled primarily south of the second cataract of the Nile, which is generally that's identity. This, of course, leads to Nimrod, the first world dictator. Then west of Egypt, Put, what we consider as North Africa. And then Canaan, Sidon, Gaza, Sodom and Gomorrah, and all that. And Kittim and the Sinites, which lead to far east, strangely enough. And then we have Shem. Now, you'll discover the chronicle is most concerned, these other incidental to his purpose, is Shem, because from Shem will come Abraham, and from that will come David. So we have Shem, who gives rise to Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. As we go through all of these, in the days of Peleg's, when the earth divided, some people think that may be a reference to continental drift. Others think it has to do with the division of the languages, whichever. But in any case, it's from Peleg that we have a string that finally leads to Terah, the father of Abraham. So that's the thread that the chronicle is primarily concerned with. And you'll discover the Bible, most of the Bible is written as a preservation of the messianic line. You'll see plots and counterplots and all kinds of shenanigans as Satan tries to wipe out the messianic line, and God always obviously outsmarts him. And so it can be viewed as a drama in just those terms. Now, if we go through and list all of these, you'll discover that in Shem there are 26 nations. Under Ham there are 30. Under Japheth, 14. That adds up to 70. It's interesting that there are 70 nations from Noah. There's also 70 families that enter Egypt. It's interesting how the Bible seems to put in juxtaposition the Gentiles and his chosen people, and it's in both cases in 70 divisions. I think that's interesting. We tend to think of the chosen people as one of many, many different threads. The biblical point of view, it counts for half of them, in a sense. Not maybe in numbers, but in significance, and more than that in significance. Well, moving on then, the Chronicles, the sons of Yavin were Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dedanim, sons of Ham, Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, and Canaan, and the sons of Cush, Zeba, Havilah, Sabada, Rama, Saptaka, the sons of Rama, Sheba, and Dedan, which are basically Saudi Arabia. And Cush begot Nimrod, and he began to be mighty upon the earth. This is where Nimrod is the first world dictator, and one that deserves a lot of our attention because he may be in many ways, more ways than most people realize, a foreshadowing of the final world dictator. Mitzrayim is Egypt. Mitzrayim begot Ludim, Anamim, Lehabim, Naphtubim, Pathrusim, and Kaslubim, of whom came the Philistines and the Kaphthorim. And Canaan begot Sidon, his firstborn, and Heth, and the Jebusite also, and the Amorite, and the Girgashite, and the Hivite, and the Arkite, and the Sinite, and the Arvite, and the Semarite, and the Hamathite. Many of these are the tribes that will occupy Canaan and will occupy our concerns all through Joshua and Judges and following. There's one name here you might notice, the Sinite. It's the term from which China, the study of China, gets Sino-Russian relationships. It's a prefix of the Chinese, the Far Easterners. The sons of Shem, Elam and Asher, and Arphaxad, and Lud, and Aram, and Uz, and Hul, and Gether, and Meshech. And Arphaxad begot, he's the important one to us, begot Shelah, and Shelah begot Eber. And some people think that Hebrew may be from Eber. Some feel it's those that crossed the river. I won't go down that path here. In any case, under Eber are born two sons. The name of the one was Peleg, because in his days the earth was divided. And his brother's name was Yoktan. And Yoktan begot Almadad and Shelef and Hazarmaveth and Zerah and Yerah, I should say. Hadaram also and Uzal and Dikla and Ebal and Abimael and Sheba and Ophir and Havilah and Jobab. All of these were the sons of Yoktan. Shem, Arphaxad, Shelah, Eber, Peleg, Reu, Zerah, Nahor, Terah, Abram. The same is Abraham. He obviously gets his name changed in Genesis 17 or wherever. Shem is the important one for you and I because we have Persia. Out of Arphaxad comes, of course, the line that we're interested in. Aram is, in effect, is Assyria, if you will. Aramaic comes from Aram, if you will. But, of course, Abraham will constitute the chronicler's focus as we go further. The sons of Abraham, Isaac and Ishmael. It's interesting that they're in that order. That's not the order they were born. Be careful of biblical orders here. And these are generations. The firstborn of Ishmael, takes Ishmael first to get him out of the way, so to speak. Ishmael, Nebaioth, then Kedar, Abdiel, and Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Masa, Hadad, Atima, Jetur, Naphish, and Kadima. These are the sons of Ishmael. There's 12 of them, just as there will be 12 to Jacob. Abraham is our key player so far, mentioned 74 times in the New Testament. He's venerated by all three monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all venerate Abraham. He has distinctive titles in the scripture, the father of the faithful in Hebrews 11, the friend of God in James 2, and so on. His father was Terah, and Terah had Abraham, Nahor, Haran, and a daughter by the name of Sarai. And Abraham marries his sister. So when he passes her off as his sister rather than his wife, he's only half lying. But of course, he's misleading, so he's guilty of lying. But still, many people overlook the fact that, yes, she also was his sister. And he has, of course, two sons, Ishmael and Isaac. Nahor is going to have Bethuel, Uz, Buz, Kemuel, Kesed, Hazo, Bildash, and Yedlaf. Haran is going to have Milcah, Iscar, and one by the name of Lot. And you recognize that Lot, thus, is a nephew of Abraham. That's going to become important later on. Bethuel has Rebekah and Laban. Obviously, Isaac is interested in Rebekah, but he ends up getting from her, he gets Esau and Jacob. Esau is going to be the perpetual enemy of Jacob. It'll even start inside the womb. Bethuel has a son by the name of Laban who has two daughters, Leah and Rachel. And that, those are the two that Jacob, of course, will have his eye on and ultimately marry both of them. Lot has two sons by incest, Moab and Ammon. So that's the picture of Terah's family. And so we have, let's take another look at the descendants of Abraham. He has Isaac by Sarah. He has Ishmael by Hagar. Under Keturah, he has a whole string of them. Zimran, Jokshan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. From Jokshan, we have Sheba and Dedan, commonly associated with the Saudi Arabian Peninsula. Under Midian, there's a whole other list of them. The point is, the Sheba and Dedan of Saudi Arabia, these others under Midian are the Bedouins. Now, what's interesting about these is that all of these trace themselves back to Abraham, but through Keturah, not through Sarah, or even Hagar, for that matter. Now, it's going to get a little more complicated because under Ishmael, he has his 12 sons. Esau strikes out pretty early to abandon his, he not only sells his birthright, but he deliberately, to offend his parents, takes wives of the Ishmaelites. And so the Edomites, or the Esau descendants, and the Ishmaelites commingle. So strangely enough, no one with any real certainty can truly trace his lineage back to Ishmael. They like to make those claims, but it turns out it ain't that easy. They're commonly called in the press Arabs, but that's again a misnomer. They may or may not have anything to do with the Arabic ethnic background or the geography of the Arabian Peninsula. But let me just put a caution flag there. When you use that term, realize that most people are probably misusing it. Let's talk about the wives. Let's take these by wives. Now, the sons of Keturah, Abraham's concubine, she bears Zimran, Yoksam, Midian, Midian, Ishbak, Shua, and these are the sons of Yoksam, Sheba, and Dedan, and the sons of Midian, Ephah, Epher, and Hanok, and Abida, and Eldah, and all these are the sons of Keturah. I thought the charts are easier to follow than the text, but let's go on. And Abraham begot Isaac. The sons of Isaac were Esau and Israel, using the preferred name here. The sons of Esau were Eliphaz, Reuel, Jeus, Yalam, and Korah. Sons of Eliphaz, Teman, Omar, Zephi, Gatham, Kenaz, and Timnah, and Amalek. The Amalekites are going to be very important downstream, but in any case, when you're talking about the sons of Esau, you're talking about generally are the virulent adversaries of Israel. The sons of Reuel were Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, and Missa. The sons of Seir, Lotan, Shobal, and Zibeon, and Anna, and Dishbon, and Ezer, and Dishon. The sons of Lotan, Hore, and Homan, and Timnah was Lotan's sister. The sons of Shobal were Elion, Manahath, and Ebal, Shephi, and Onam. And the sons of Zibeon, Aya, and Anna. The sons of Anna, Dishon. The sons of Dishon, Amram, Ishban, Ithran, and Haran. The sons of Ezer are Bilhan, Zavan, and Yaktan. The sons of Dishon, Uz, and Aran. All these are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before any king reigned over the children of Israel. Bela, the son of Beor, and the name of his city was Dinhaba. And when Bela was dead, Jobab, the son of Zerah of Bozrah, reigned in his stead. And when Jobab was dead, Hushan of the land of the Temanites reigned in his stead. And when Hushan was dead, Hadad, the son of Bedad, which smote Midian in the field of Moab, reigned in his stead. And the name of his city was Avith. And when Hadad was dead, Samla of Masrekah reigned in his stead. And when Samla was dead, Shaul of Rehoboth by the river reigned in his stead. And when Shaul was dead, Baal-Hanan, the son of Achbor, reigned in his stead. And when Baal-Hanan was dead, Hadad reigned in his stead. The name of his city was Bai, and his wife's name was Mehetabel, and the daughter of Matred, the daughter of Mesahab. Hadad died also. The dukes of Edom were, and there's a 10 of them, or 11 of them, Duke Timnah, Duke Aliah, Duke Yeteth, Duke Aholibamah, Duke Elah, Duke Penon, Duke Kenaz, Duke Teman, Duke Mitzbar, Duke Migdal, Duke Imran. These are the dukes of Edom. Anyone want me to read those again? I sure hope not. I don't think I could do it twice in a row. But anyway, the dukes or the leaders of Edom are adversaries. Okay, let's go to chapter 2. It's going to get more interesting. We're going to jump into specifically the genealogy of Judah. That's our primary target here anyway. These are the sons of Israel: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Dan, Joseph, Benjamin, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. The sons of Judah were Ur and Onan and Shelah, which three were born unto him of the daughter of Shua the Canaanitess. And Ur, the firstborn of Judah, was evil in the sight of the Lord, and he slew them. We're going to discover that all three of these boys do not provide issue that God is interested in. It's very strange things going on here. Let's back up and take up these 12 patriarchs. Refresh our memory here. Abraham, of course, had Sarah, and Hagar, of course, had Ishmael, but under Sarah he had Isaac, and with Rebekah, had two, Esau and Jacob. Again, we'll follow the main line here. Jacob had two wives, Leah and Rachel, and Leah bore four: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. Rachel, being barren, figured she resorted to a procedure that was common in those days to give her handmaid as her surrogate, Bilhah, and through that has Dan and Naphtali. Leah figures, gee, if what's good for the goose is good for the gander, I guess, so she gives her handmaid, Zilpah, to Jacob, through whom we have Gad and Asher. By this time, Rachel bears. She has Joseph. And so here's Jacob's with the son of the one he loved Rachel more than life itself. So you can tell right away Joseph, not only because he's the youngest, but he's also from Leah, gets very favored treatment. You know the story of Joseph. Meanwhile, Leah bears a couple more, Issachar and Zebulun. And Rachel, although she dies in childbirth, provides Benjamin. So those, there you have the 12. It would be simple except for the fact Joseph, when he rises to prime minister of the known world at that time, he has two children from his Egyptian wife, Manasseh and Ephraim, and they get adopted by Jacob as his sons. So Jacob really has a group of 13 to choose from, because you've just split Joseph into two halves, so to speak. So recognize that when you read your Bible, because you'll often see all 12 listed with one missing. And you don't have 11, you still have 12 with one missing. How do they pull that off? With the baker's dozen. There's 13 to choose from. So there's times that Levi is not mentioned because they don't go to war, but you still have 12 tribes going to war. You follow me? I'll show you some surprising ways before this thing is over. Anyway, they're the famous 12 tribes. Leah had her four. Each one's name has a meaning. Reuben, behold a son. Simeon means herd. Each one of these are results of prayer in their birth. And you want to learn those names. They're in the margin of most of your study Bibles because these tribes are listed. Let me get through these. Bilhah has two, then Zilpah has two, Leah has a couple more, then Rachel has her two. These tribes are listed 20 times in your Bible, and each time they're listed, they're in a different order, and each time that order spells a different sentence. So I'll let you play with that and see what you come up with. Let's go on now. The story of Tamar is a strange, sordid little story tucked in Genesis 38. Genesis 37 introduces Joseph, and the rest of the book of Genesis from 37 to 50 is this incredible drama of Joseph as he gets sold into Egypt, rises to become prime minister of the world and all that. Right in the middle of all this, or not middle of the second chapter, there's a strange episode where Tamar, because she was denied her husband from Judah, he unknowingly impregnates her, thinks she's a prostitute, not knowing, and so she's his daughter-in-law. So through her father-in-law, she has two sons, Perez and Zerah. So they're considered sons of Judah, strangely. And what God is doing here is he's preserving the messianic line, strangely enough. And anyway, so Tamar has these twins, Perez and Zerah, and Perez is going to be very important to us as we go. The sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul, and the sons of Zerah was Zimri, Ethan, Himal, Calcol, and Dara, five of them in all. And the sons of Carmi, Achar, the troubler of Israel, who transgressed in the thing accursed. There's Midrashic legends that from Zerah, not Perez, the other guy, will ultimately come Rachel. So she may have a linkage in here too, at least in legend. Moving on, and the sons of Ethan were Azariah, the sons of Hezron were born unto him, Jerahmeel and Ram and Chelubai, and Ram begot Amminadab, and Amminadab begot Nashon, and the prince of the children of Judah, and Nashon begot Salma, and Salma begot Boaz. Salma begot Boaz by marrying Rachel, incidentally. Now, it's incidental to the chronicler's purpose, but it's an interesting thing to understand that Boaz's mother was a Moabite. Anyway, and Boaz begot Obed, and Obed begot Jesse. And this little string is going to be very important to us in a minute. When you get to Genesis 38, that's the strange chapter we find inserted in the story of Joseph. And if you look at it in the Hebrew, remember Hebrew goes from right to left. At 49 letter intervals, we find the name of Boaz. Well, that might be just a statistical accident. Except we continue at 49 letter intervals and we get the name of Ruth. And if you continue in this, you'll find at 49 letter intervals the name Obed. And then at 49 letter intervals, you find the name Yishai or Jesse. And then you find at 49 letter intervals the name of David. Now let's add this up. You have encrypted in the text itself the name of Boaz, Ruth, Obed, Jesse, and David. All in 49 letter intervals. And all in chronological order. The chances of this just occurring as an accident of language is one chance in 70 million. I think that's kind of interesting to discover that David's genealogy is encrypted in the books of Moses long before Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and the time of David. centuries before. They're embodied here. That also implies that God gave the Torah letter by letter. There's a strange prophecy when Ruth and Boaz get married. At their wedding, someone says, "Let your house be like the house of Perez, who Tamar bare unto Judah of the seed, which the Lord shall give of this young woman." Well, if you know the story of Perez and Tamar, and someone said that at your wedding, you'd say, "Same to you, fella." You know. But you see, it's not a toast, it's a prophecy. You have to know that in the Torah, a bastard cannot enter into the congregation until the 10th generation. In other words, for 10 generations, he cannot inherit. When you take a look at Perez's genealogy, the 10th generation from Perez is, guess who? David. So there again, in the last few verses of chapter 4 of Ruth, which is in the time of the judges, we have David prophesied again in the text. Boaz, Obed, Jesse, David. It's interesting to notice how it's always the 10th man that seems to be so important. Noah was the 10th man, Abraham's the 10th from Noah, and Boaz is the 10th from Abraham. Now, I don't know what you do with that piece of information. But I get fascinated when I see fingerprints of the Holy Spirit on the text. These are clearly objects of deliberate design, not accidents. That's the main point I want to leave you with. Okay, let's continue. Boaz begot Obed. Obed begot Jesse. Jesse begot his firstborn Eliab, and Abinadab the second, Shema the third, Nethaneel the fourth, Redai the fifth, Ozem the sixth, David the seventh. Okay, that's the seven sons, and he's the youngest, obviously. Whose sisters were Zeruiah and Abigail, and the sons Zeruiah and Abishai and Joab and Asahel. Three. Boaz and David. That's the linkage. Abigail bare Amasa, and the father of Amasa was Jether the Ishmaelite. Caleb, the son of Hezron, begot children of Azubah, his wife, and of Yerioth, and her sons were these, Yeser, Shobab, and Arden. And Azubah was dead. Caleb took unto him Ephrath, and bare him Hur, and Hur begot Uri, and Uri begot Bezalel. Now you'll notice some of these names are the same as geographical names. Bethlehem Ephrathah is a name that rings in our ears because of the Christmas cards. But there was a person by the name of Ephrathah. And often these names in geography will get confused. So do the tribal names. When you speak of me as, say, for example, I'm in Idaho now, but I came from California. He was a Californian. Does that mean I have an ethnic link to California? Not necessarily. It just means I came from there geographically. The tribes themselves will give their names to the places where they're allotted, but as time goes on, that region carries the tribal name independent of who happens to be living there. Because as time's going on, they're no longer confined. If you're from Ephraim, you may or may not be of the tribe of Ephraim in later years. And many people get confused. They assume that when these territories are conquered, that everybody that is conquered is from that tribe, not necessarily. We're going to get into that very much in Chronicles later. Because there's a lot of strange myths that arise from these misunderstandings. Moving on, verse 21. And afterward Hezron went into the daughter of Machir, the father of Gilead, whom he married when he was 80 years old, and she bare him Segub. That's getting on, 60 years? And Segub begot Yair, who had 20 cities in the land of Gilead, and he took Geshur and Aram and the towns of Jair from them, and Kenoth and the towns thereof, even the 80 cities, all these belonged to the sons of Machir, the father of Gilead. And after the Hezron was dead in Calebrephrathah, then Abiah, Hezron's wife, bare him Asher, the father of Tekoa, and the sons, that's where, remember, Amos came from, that area. The sons of Yerahmeel, the firstborn of Hezron, were Ram, the firstborn, Bunah, and Oren, and Ozem, and Ahijah. And Yerahmeel also had another wife whose name was Atara, and she was the mother Onam. And the sons of Ram, the firstborn of Yerahmeel, were Maaz, Yamin, and Ekar. And the sons of Onam were Shemai and Yada, and the sons of Shemai, Nadab, and Abishur. The name of the wife of Abishur was Abihail, and she bare him Aban and Molid. The sons of Nadab, Selid, Apim. But Saleb died without children, the sons of Apim, Ishi, the sons of Ishi, Sheshan, and the children of Sheshan, Ahlai. The sons of Yada, the brother of Shammai, Jether, Jonathan, and Jether died without children, sons of Jonathan, Beleth, and Yaza, and these were the sons of Yerahmeel. Now, Shishan had no sons but daughters. And Shishan had a servant, an Egyptian, whose name was Yarha. And Shishan gave his daughter to Yarha, his servant, to wife, and she bare him Attai. And Attai began Nathan, and Nathan begot Zabad. Be on your guard, there are a lot of Nathans in the stories. There's prophets Nathans, there's sons of David named Nathan. Realize that some of these names are not very distinctive in that sense. And Zabad begot Ephalal, and Ephalal begot Obed, and Obed begot Jehu, and Jehu begot Azariah, and Azariah begot Helez, and Helez begot Eliasha, and Eliasha begot Sisamai, and Sisamai begot Shalom, and Shalom begot Yechemiah, and Yechemiah begot Elishama, and the sons of Caleb, the brother of Jerahmeel, were Mesha, his firstborn, which was the father of Ziph, and the sons of Merishah, the father of Hebron, and the sons of Hebron, Korah, Tapua, Rechem, and Shema. And Shema begot Raham, the father of Yorkam, and Rechem begot Shemai. You know, this can sound pretty tedious, but we're actually going through a family tree from Adam all the way. So it's astonishing that this is all linked. I might warn you, too, though, there are, when it says the sons, or the father of, they have no label for grandfather or grandson. So there are even more generations than we're reading, because in many cases the chronicler has skipped a few, highlighting those that he regards as relevant. So while this is tedious to us, because most of them are unfamiliar to us, you need to realize also in these there are still links that are unrecorded here. Anyway, Ephah, Caleb's concubine, bare Haran, Moza, and Gazez, and Haran begot Gazez, and the sons of Yadai, Regem, and Yothan, and Geshen, and Pelet, and Ephah, and Shaph, and Makah, Caleb's concubine, bare Sheba, and on it goes. She bare also Sha'af, the father of Madmanah, and Sheba, the father of Machpanah, and father of Gibeah, and the daughter of Caleb was Aksa. These were the sons of Caleb, the son of Hur, the firstborn of Ephratah, Shobal, the father of Kiriath-Jearim, and Salma, the father of Bethlehem. See, Bethlehem was a person's name. Hereph, the father of Beth-Gibeon. Of course, that gives a name to a town. And Shobal, the father of Kiriath-Jearim, and the sons, and Hereth, and half of the Manassehites. The families of Kiriath-Jearim, the Ithrites, the Puhites, the Shumathites, and the Mishraites, and of them the Zerithites and the Ishtaolites. Wow. And the sons of Salma, Bethlehem, and the Neophelites, and Ataroth, and the house of Joab, and half the Manorites, the Zorites. And the families of the scribes which dwelt at Jabez, the Tirites, the Shimeites, the Sukathites, and these are the Kenites that came from Hemath, the father of the house of Rechab. Whew. Okay. One more to go through. Okay. 1 Chronicles chapter 3. This is the genealogy of David. We're getting to the pay dirt here. Now these are the sons of David which were born unto him at Hebron. The firstborn Anan of Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess. The second Daniel of Abigail, the Carmelitess. The third Absalom, the son of Machah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. And fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith. And the fifth, Shephatiah of Abital. And the sixth, Ithream by Iglah, his wife. These six were born unto him in Hebron, and there he reigned 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years. These were born to him in Jerusalem, Shimeah, Shobab, and Nathan, and Solomon, four of Bathshua, the daughter of Amiel, Bathsheba. That's another treatment of Bathsheba, obviously. Ithbar also, and Elishama, and Eliphelet, and Nogah, and Nepheg, and Japhia, and Elishama, and Eliada, and Eliphelet, nine. These were all sons of David, besides their sons of concubines, and Tamar, their sister. And Solomon's son was Rehoboam, Abiah his son, Asa his son, Jehoshaphat his son, Jehoram his son, Ahaziah his son, and Joash his son, and Amaziah his son, Azariah his son, Jotham his son, Ahaz his son, Hezekiah his son, Manasseh his son, Ammon his son, Josiah his son. That's your dynasty. We're going to be going through those kings as they take their shot at it. And the sons of Josiah were the firstborn of Johanan, the second Jehoiakim, and the third Zedekiah, and the fourth Shalom. Now, Ahaz has Hezekiah and Manasseh. Ahaz is bad news. Hezekiah was a breath of fresh air. Manasseh was a disaster. And that's going to be important to understand when we get there. As you get through these others after Josiah, one of these is Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim is going to have Jehoiachin, and he's going to have, well, here we go. Here are the sons of Jehoiakim, Jeconiah, his son, or also called Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah, his son. There's a lot of confusion. It's easy to get mixed up. Jeconiah is also called Coniah. We're going to talk about him in a minute. And his son, Zedekiah, his son. So there's two Zedekiahs, you'll notice. Okay. A generation apart. And the sons of Jeconiah, Asher, Salathiel, his son, Malchiram, also Pediah, and Shenazar, and Jeconiah, Hoshama, and Nedabiah. And the sons of Pediah were Zerubbabel and Shimei, and the sons of Zerubbabel, Meshulam, Hananiah, Shelemith, their sister. The Zerubbabel is going to be a key player. We've got Jeconiah is going to be a key player to us. Zedekiah, we're going to talk about. Pediah is going to call. And the fact that Pediah is the father of Zerubbabel, according to the chronicler. Well, we're going to take a look at that in a minute. Hashabiah, Ophel, and Berechiah, and Hasadiah, and Yusha, Beshed, five. And the sons of Hananiah, Pelatiah, and Jesiah, and the sons of Rephaiah, and the sons of Arnon, the sons of Obadiah, and the sons of Shechaniah, and the sons of Shechaniah were Shemaiah, and the sons of Shemaiah, Hattush, and Igal, and Bariah, and Neariah, and Shaphat, six of them. And the sons of Neariah, Elionai, and Hezekiah, and Azrakam, three. And the sons of Elonai were Hodiah, and Elishib, and Beliah, and Akub, and Yohanan, and Deliah, and Ananiah, seven. Okay. We glossed over some difficulties. Zerubbabel, in verse 19, is elsewhere called the son of Shealtiel, not the son of Pediah. He's presented as the son of Pediah in the text we just read. But in Ezra 3 and 5 and Nehemiah 12 and Haggai 1 and 14 and Matthew and Luke, he is presented as the son of Shealtiel, not the son of Pediah. We got a problem here. Boy, the critics can start sharpening their knives. See, the Bible's got contradictions. Maybe. Whenever you find, by the way, a little trick, every time you find what apparently is a contradiction, rejoice. Because God always rewards the diligent, because behind these apparent contradictions or problems is usually a discovery. A second problem is that in Luke's genealogy, he identifies Shealtiel as the son of Neri, whose descent is not from Solomon at all. And the third problem is that in Zerubbabel's line, the chronicler lists Zerubbabel's seven sons and one daughter. And none of them appear in the genealogies of either Matthew or Luke. So those are some discrepancies. There are lots of other little discrepancies, but they're really trivial things of spelling and minor. But these are what's interesting about these difficulties is the commentators don't quite agree. They all speculate, and many of them have missed the whole point. And let me show you what I mean. Understand these kings of David, after he dies, Solomon, after Solomon dies, you got a place splits. The dynasty of David goes from bad to worse, with a couple of exceptions, Hezekiah and Josiah, a couple of exceptions. It finally gets so bad that in the days of Jeconiah, also called Coniah, we have this interesting blood curse recorded in Jeremiah 22:30. Jeremiah records, "Thus saith the Lord, write ye this man childless, a man that shall not prosper in his days. For no man of his seed shall prosper, sitting upon the throne of David and ruling any more in Judah." That's quite a sentence. And that creates a fascinating problem. If you look at it spiritually, you can visualize Satan and his gang throwing a party. Because they must read this and figure God has shot himself in the foot, as we might say. Because God is committed to bringing the Messiah from the royal line of David. The next one in the royal line of David is Jeconiah. And on Jeconiah, God pronounces a blood curse. Write this man childless. a man that shall not prosper in his days, for no man of his seed shall prosper sitting upon the throne of David and ruling anymore in Judah. So how do you get out from under this one? What you might want to do sometime is take this verse to a serious rabbinical scholar. Anyone that you know that takes any Jewish person that takes the Tanakh, the Old Testament, seriously, and ask him, what do you do with this verse? The Messiah has to come from the royal line, right? Right. How can he come from the royal line if there is a curse pronounced on that very line? What do you do with that? He's also, by the way, called Jehoiachin. Those are the same, different names for the same guy. Well, we'll take that up in the next session. We'll give you a week to think about it. So during this week, resolve the difficulties that we've just listed for chapter 3. And then go ahead and read the remainder of the genealogical section of the book, chapters 4 through 9.